New Galaxy Broadcasting proudly presents Integrative Hermetic Health with Hugo Rodier, MD. In this program, we explore a powerful new paradigm for health from the standpoint of integrative medicine. In his practice, Dr. Rodier integrates the ancient Hermetic art and the enduring role of food as medicine with modern nutrition, but also allowing for the wide range of important health practices, including truly valuable medical discoveries, chiropractic, acupuncture, homeopathic and herbal medicine. In this program, Hugo Rodier, an expert in intestinal health and nutrition, will help the audience discover an approach that focuses on actual cures, not the masking of the elegant simplicity of many health solutions for the sake of profit. Profit too long has been an overriding motive of the pharmaceutical companies, and sometimes, sadly, by many in the medical establishment today. Welcome to the Integrative Hermetic Health Show. My name is Johnny Bluestar, and I assist Hugo Rodier, MD, an integrative physician, in hosting and producing the show. As those of you who have tuned in before realized, Dr. Rodier, since the very beginning of his career, has defined his role as a physician in a manner determined to help the whole person, not just the person narrowly defined as a patient, and help them find their best health solutions. He believes that a person's larger perspective of life, even his or her philosophy, defines elements critically related to health issues. Further, he believes in something called lifestyle medicine, which is one of the themes of this program. Good morning, Dr. Rodier.
Good morning, Johnny. Thanks for having me.
Oh, my pleasure. Well, let's perhaps begin with this. What is new to me is the nomenclature, the name lifestyle medicine, and maybe you could explain your concern for the need for it.
Well, it's just a reincarnation of the old preventive medicine, holistic medicine, alternative medicine. And so the more mainstream docs, they're not really wishing to admit that they've been wrong. So instead of saying, oh, yeah, integrative medicine was right all along, they coined a new term, lifestyle medicine.
That's interesting.
So, you know, it's just human nature, totally understandable. And so I quote from an article in the American Journal of Medicine just came out. Quote, a substantial opportunity to enhance the value equation in medicine by improving outcomes for our patients and simultaneously controlling costs. The time has come to truly practice lifestyle medicine and encourage positive lifestyle decisions for our patients and adopt them in our lives. Our patients and our country should demand nothing less. End quote. Well, yeah, I mean, read between the lines. This is what we've known for generations. William Osler, the father of modern medicine, said the same thing. And who doesn't know out there today in their heart of hearts that it is our lifestyles that are causing a lot of our problems? The way we run the environment, the pollution we create, the poor foods we overprocess, our addictions to food and chemicals, our relationships, all those things are lifestyle issues that were neatly covered by holistic medicine, preventive medicine, no matter what you call it. We all get the message, right? And yeah. So right now, the modern mainstream docs, instead of admitting that they've been misguided in their pursuit of treating symptoms, are now calling it lifestyle medicine. Hey, but you know, a rose is a rose is a rose, right?
Yeah, that's right. You know, in a certain way, this isn't completely roses, because in a recent blog, you talked about nutritionally deficient doctors, and you have referred to a new site created by a doctor to advise patients about nutrition, which you have some problems with. Let me read a description of this site that was in Reuters. Okay, so Reuters reports a new patient resource published in JAMA Internal Medicine suggests that most people do not need vitamins or nutritional supplements because they can obtain all the necessary nutrients through a healthy diet. Reuters says the new patient page offers practical advice and answers to questions about vitamins and nutritional supplements that patients often bring up to their doctors. The article mentions, quote, although the U.S. Food and Drug Administration oversees the vitamin and dietary supplement industry, the products are assumed to be safe without testing, unlike prescription drugs, which undergo an approval process. Additionally, Reuters states that there are more than 90,000 supplements on the U.S. market that include a wide range of vitamins, minerals, and chemicals, and approximately 23,000 emergency department visits each year are related to nutritional supplements. So what do you think about that?
disgusting.
I mean, isn't it?
Any logical person will see right through. This is a pot calling the kettle black. You know, and let's put things in perspective. Nutritional supplements are nutrition, which has been tested in our gut, in our digestion for millennia, all right? And every year we recall how many drugs, dozens of drugs. Do we recall any nutritional supplements? None. Every year we list incredible side effects and problems with drugs that kill people, yet how many supplements kill people? Zero. And so it's amazing. I think this is an astroturf site. You know, fake grassroots. They claim to be funded by good intended people. When I bet you money, if we look into the site, we'll see that it's being financed by the pharmaceuticals and other orthodox organizations. But let's answer other criticism from the site. Number one, the claim that a healthy diet, a good balanced diet will do. All right, true. But how many Americans eat a healthy balanced diet? I say 2%. Number two, that there is no need for supplements. Really? Follow a can of veggies from its inception. Number one, the ground the veggie is grown in is depleted. We know that our topsoil has one-third of the nutrients it used to have. Two, the water we irrigate those crops with is polluted as well. Three, we spray those crops with pesticides. Then we take the veggie through a washing process which takes away a whole lot of nutrients. Then we put them in a can, which is an aluminum can, which has BPA in it. And so those are two more pollutants. And then we shelf the can. Oh, it stays there for months, and then it's shipped in a hot truck. Then it sits at the grocery store for another who knows how long. Then you take it home and microwave it, all right?
Right.
And so tell me, what is the nutritional status of that veggie by the time you eat it?
Well, I would say this, that I think you forgot, but maybe you didn't, that these are often GMOs also.
Well, that's where I threw in pesticides. You know, yeah, you're right. So the pesticide can be sprayed or put into the genetic material of the veggie itself. And so, you know, for every article you find saying that this vitamin didn't help and that one didn't help, and most of them are in very ill people, you know, you expect to resurrect them with vitamin C now. It's, you know, the horse is out of the barn. It's too late for a very critical ill person. Remember that study that came out saying vitamin C doesn't work? And it was conducted in very ill patients in nursing homes? You know, yeah. Do the math. And then they don't account for pollution, environmental pollution. Did you know that one cigarette, which is a portion of what we are inhaling when we breathe polluted air in our big cities, well, one cigarette will rob you of 50 grams of milligrams of vitamin C, which is what you require, along with B vitamins, to detoxify that cigarette. And so there goes the minimum daily requirement. One cigarette, you're done. You're behind the eight ball. And so it's just disgusting what the implications are of the site, the arrogance to presume to educate people, patients on nutrition, when they are nutritionally deficient themselves.
Well, another point is that it seems to me that part of the goal is one of the, I don't know what the status is now, is trying to have doctors have to prescribe supplements. They would have to go through an extraordinary procedure to be able to sell them.
Well, the AMA has looked into this and has required doctors not to charge much more than what they paid for shipping to make.
Well, I'm talking about the companies that have to produce these things, that they would have to go through testing.
Well, they're trying. In fact, they're called Codis Alimentarius, and it's huge in Europe. So one of these days we might see a huge restriction of supplements over the counter. But the fight goes on, you know, the forces of good, incidentally led by our retiring senator from Utah, Orrin Hatch, is still at work. So we still have good people saying, no, these things should be available to people over the counter. Another response from the pharmaceuticals is to turn these supplements into drugs and give them a fancy name.
Oh, wow.
Like omega oils are now known as Lovasa. Hey, it's the same thing, but now they charge an arm and a leg because theirs, their omega oil works, but the one over the counter does not. That's just snake oil. The same with MTHFR, which is an enzyme that some people lack to correctly process, digest, if you will, folic acid. That has turned into a drug as well, Deplin, and they charge you like 10 times more what you could pay over the counter for the same thing. And so it goes with vitamin A, which is a huge product for the dermatologist treating acne. Vitamin B, I just mentioned that, in addition to SAMe in Europe. Vitamin D is a drug. Melatonin is a drug. GABA, the amino acid GABA, became gabapentin, the drug. Alpha lipoic acid from broccoli, a drug in Europe. Arginine, better known as Viagra, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And so really, you know, I mean, I'm trying not to get mad, although it's kind of fun for drama. Follow the money. Follow the money.
It's you know, one of the things that, you know, I do watch mainstream media sometimes, particularly I like to look at what I consider the opposition. And a lot of the CNN and MSNBC commercials are for drugs, right?
Exactly.
And when I see this, I think that the American people are absolutely out of their mind. They could be programmed to want something that kills you or toxifies you in 15 different ways while somebody's swinging who's in a playground on a swing. That's what I meant.
Yeah, yeah. These totally healthy people with smiles on their faces, they're very good looking, and butterflies copulating in the air around them. You know, and all these names they come up with, really? You expect me to remember all those stupid names? Hey, I got a name for a new pharmaceutical product, Galablex. Galablex will cure anything for you. How about that?
It's nice. You know, we need to take a break for a minute, and we'll come back and get into true lifestyle medicine might be like. This is Johnny Bluestar, CEO of New Galaxy Enterprises, a media content development company. Want to write a book but don't want the challenges of developing time-consuming social media platform, costly private book promotions, complex email campaigns, and advertising commitments? If you write a book about your business, you don't need a mass audience. Focus on prospective clients with the best business card there is, your own book. To learn more about New Galaxy, see samples of our work, or talk to us about your project, please go to www.newgalaxyenterprises.com and fill out the contact form.
It is the 15th century. El Tesoro de Cielo, a Spanish treasure ship, sends a scouting expedition to a strange island. Golden statues surrounding them prove the enormity of their find. Suddenly, hordes of ghoulish creatures with scaly green flesh and skeletal wings descend upon them from the sky.
What do you think of this, Rufio?
These creatures are fragile, Captain. We can take them with our swords.
They seem supernatural. Who knows what powers they possess?
Fallen angels, weakened by their treason.
By God, are you saying they're Nephilim, the devil's host?
I'm saying whatever they are, we can take them. Do any of you cowards dare join me?
Up against sharp knife-like nails and hideous fangs, the men's swords rip into slimy green flesh. Though black blood pours copiously from their half-naked bodies, creatures miraculously persist. Can the crew survive this bloody, cursed battle?
Find out more by Googling The Thrice Born, a new sci-fi supernatural novel by Carlos Lopez Avery and Johnny Bluestar. Google with the words Carlos Johnny Kendall, The Thrice Born. That's Carlos Johnny Kendall, The Thrice Born.
To keep us on the bright side, here's a song that deals with a rather sad relationship, but dealt with by the singer in a most entertaining way. This song has been loved by listeners throughout the world. Here's Stephanie Slevin, a singer-songwriter from the UK, singing I Know You Love Me the Most.
I may have marmalade on my toast and you may have your caviar. I may walk to work in my second-hand shoes and you drive in your fancy car. I'm down here and you're up there. You're giving me the looks like you don't care. But they say love and hate are so very close. So I know that you love me the most. I know by the way you stare at me that deep down inside you care for me. You may drink champagne to my cup of tea, but nobody freaking cares. And you say I ain't the one for you, that I'm way down there beneath the view. But look at what your poor sheik's done to you, and nobody freaking cares. She took your money and laughed at you, and then slept with all your mates and they were laughing too. So let's kick her to the curb, yeah, me and you, for nobody freaking cares. And I know you said bad things of me, but deep down inside you care for me. For they say love and hate are so very close, so I know that you love me the most. You took to your drink and your one night stand, so please don't judge me by your own bad hand. Yeah, stand up straight, just be the man, for nobody freaking cares. And come down off your mighty horse and take a chance on me, and we'll run the course and we'll show the bitch we don't do divorce, for nobody freaking cares. And I know you said bad things of me, but deep down inside you care for me. For they say love and hate are so very close, so I know that you love me the most. Yes, I know that you love me the most.
We're back on the Integrative Hermetic Health Show with Dr. Rodier, and we're going to look at the true meaning of lifestyle medicine from an enlightened point of view. One of the things that I've understood is that eating a certain amount of fiber daily may reduce the risk for early death and enhance our health. How does that work?
Well, going back to lifestyle medicine, let me first say that it can be divided into three big pillars.
Okay.
One, nutrition, which you're referring to. Two, our relationships. And three, the environment. So nutrition. Well, who doesn't know right now that our health is totally dependent on our gut bacteria, the microbiome? Now, I recall 30 years ago when I talked about this, I was labeled a quack. And now, who doesn't know that the microbiome is really running the show, as it should, because their DNA material, the DNA of the bacteria in the gut, outnumbers our body's DNA 150 to 1. So do the math there. But in answer to your question, fiber can be best categorized as a prebiotic, P-R-E, prebiotic, right, because it feeds probiotics. So that's one of the main roles of fiber, to keep our friendly bacteria healthy. And you see, we used to think that fiber was just to keep you regular. You know, right. Now we know it's prebiotic function. And whenever I talk about fiber and prebiotics, I think of Dr. Burkitt. That might ring a bell, but the good doctor put his name on cancer and children that affects the jaws. So you might see African kids with this huge ball at the top of the neck under the jaw. That's a Burkitt's lymphoma.
Oh.
And he observed also while he was in Africa that kids who pooped the most had a lesser risk or incidence of these lymphomas and other diseases. You know, way, way back, of course, he was just extending on the work of Metchnikoff, who won the Nobel Prize in 1908 for saying that our bacteria in the gut is 2/3 of the immune system. So if you follow that thread, you'll find that the more fiber you eat, the better your immune system, your detoxification system in the gut, and the lesser chances of all kinds of diseases, including cancer. And, you know, I remember, Johnny, I said that I think in images.
Uh-huh.
Well, whenever I start talking like this, I remember, I think I see in my mind, Laura Dern diving into a big poop of dinosaur manure looking for her radio.
I'm sorry. Well, I did want to ask something else, because one thing about the discussion of fiber, I don't really understand the biochemical effect of fiber or its constituency. Like, why does it have these properties?
Well, it's loaded with micronutrients like inulin and many others that feed the friendly bacteria, just nutrients that we, our bodies, might not accrue that much benefit from, but it's for the bacteria. So,
oh, I see.
You see?
Yeah, so, I didn't realize that.
There's a whole lot of nutrients, and if you Google inulin, that's one of them, the most quoted. And so there are many others. And so it goes to show you how important fiber is and how misguided we were until we began to see its true value. Now, speaking of fiber, you know, you can supplement that, of course, but the best way to eat fiber is fruits and veggies. A whole lot of people still think that you get most of your fiber from grains. Yeah, you do. Not very much if you're eating processed white grains, bleached out grains.
Right.
But it turns out that fruits and veggies have 2 to 6 times more fiber than grains. So
well, that's really interesting.
Whenever I tell people, hey, you got to eat a plant-based diet, you're not going to be healthy without your veggies, they say, but doc, I need protein and fiber. Meaning what they mean is I get protein from meat, or they think they're getting protein from meat and fiber from grains. Very good, very, very solid misconceptions planted by the food industry, who finds it a lot more profitable to process grains and to process cattle also in an industrial way, and they make more money. You know, veggie growers, veggie farmers hardly make any money. It's so paradoxical because, you know, that's where their nutrition is.
Well, one of the things about grains is that you do seem to like something with whole grain rich, you know, a diet with whole grains in them.
Yes.
Well,
yes,
maybe you could explain why that is.
Well, yeah, because you still get some nutrients from grains. You get some energy from grains. You get B vitamins, not as many as meat. But, yeah, a lot of micronutrients in grains. We're not going to reject a food group that has been around for millennia.
Well, we know that, for instance, paleo and some other diets do reject it. And could you explain why they claim to reject it?
Because they're fanatics that don't put things in perspective. While I agree that the paleo diet should be tried in a certain group of people, to make it for all is unsustainable. Because most countries depend on grains. That's number one. Number two, grains are very social. You know, you ever see a paleo person hanging out with other people? Hardly ever. They're munching on a carrot in a corner or eating a greasy steak by themselves. And so, no, I think food has to be social. You know, I grew up French, and food is a very social construct, very psychological. To deprive people of grains altogether, it's just not wise. However, I will say it again, a paleo diet is indicated in some people genetically, in other people, and others who might not have the microbia, the bacteria in the gut to correctly process grains. So any food allergy, you must not give up on that food until you correct the imbalance of bacteria in the gut. So if you have, say, like a wheat allergy, okay, wheat is quite processed, has GMOs, and many reasons why we might react to wheat. But to totally give up on it without trying to eat whole grain, without pesticides, with whole wheat without pesticides, and fixing the gut bacteria, it's not wise. You know, why deprive yourself of such a social, enjoyable meal that is steeped in tradition and culture and even our genes, you know? So, again, for the third time, yes, the paleo diet is a good thing for some people, but when I see it pushed on everyone, I think it's misguided.
Well, let's discuss another point about the paleo diet and other similar diets, which I guess are based on the idea of ketosis, right?
Yes.
It seems to me, I've looked at a lot of this and experimented myself, and I feel, even though I know people who are doing it right now, I feel relatively cautious about it. Because I'd like you to maybe you mentioned some of the problems with dealing with ketosis, which is sort of a special thing that you can get into when you need to, when you've run out of glucose. But to actually create this as a regular diet, what are the consequences?
Well, number one, boredom. You know, people on the paleo diet are incredibly bored. They don't last very long. I never see people lasting on the paleo diet very long. However, for the fourth time, there are some people who should be on that. if they're unable to fix their microbiome, if they're unable to do these other things. You know, let me tell you two more things about the paleo diet. One is the sugar content, which you may have alluded here tangentially. But it turns out that grains have more sugar than veggies, so they are higher in the glycemic index, which I highly recommend. That's why I tell people to go easy on grains so they don't get a total 100% pass. You see, we should fill up with the foods that have the least sugar, lean meats, veggies, and nuts. And we should eat fruits, legumes, and whole grains for fun and variety 20% of the time. So a lot of people call this 80-20. I think that's wise. To totally restrict any food group, there are consequences. And then number two, about the paleo man, and I will touch on vegetarianism at the same time. Paleo man was not as tough as he's portrayed. You know, they show this muscular guy running around after a tiger and then bringing food home. Turns out that paleo man, I mean, look at it realistically. How often did he kill a mammoth or bring a tiger home? Not that often. So most of the time, paleo man, tough paleo man, survived because his woman stayed at the cave collecting tubers and roots and seeds and fruits around the cave. So had it not been for her, tough paleo man might not have survived. So that puts it in perspective, which is what leads me to vegetarianism. There is no question that a vegetarian diet is the best. The China study proved it, a very good collection of research in a book format, the China study. Okay, well, it was a little dated because it doesn't include fish. And now we know that fish is the exception. You can eat fish if you want. So that is the best way to eat. The problem with vegetarianism is that a lot of people that embrace it feel so put out, so restricted, that they turn to sugar, processed sugars, and a whole lot more grain than they should eat. And so that's the dark side of vegetarianism. Now, if you can be a vegetarian and eat 80-20, that is, grains in moderation, whole grains in moderation for fun and variety, then you're eating the best diet, in my opinion.
Well, years ago, this is a while ago, I decided that I would become an ovo-lacto vegetarian. And I spent 20 years doing that. By the time I was finished, I was terribly ill. And part of that was because of the sugar. I was really pure ovo-lacto. Exactly. Yeah, right. And
yeah, eating Twinkies with the other hand.
Yeah, and actually, you know, this is really stupid, but one of the times I had very serious, very, very serious conditions. I was like almost comatose, and I didn't know what to do. Like one of the things I did is I juice fasted, which had corrected my asthma. Juice fasted during this time, and I went into almost I became almost comatose. And I lost tremendous amounts of weight. And I remember one of the things that happened on my way to recovery when I decided, well, maybe I should eat some meat. Now, the last food that I ate before this 20-year period with Debbie, my wife, was fried chicken. And so the first thing I did is I just said, okay, I have a desire for fried chicken. And I ate the fried chicken, and I started to feel better. Now, it took a lot of... I never had too much correct information, but I had enough correct information to stop a lot of it, and I regained weight, and I got more or less healthy. But so it was a real lesson, though, because I did learn about the sugar part, and I did realize that what had happened to me, and it was terrible. So,
well, let me reiterate the thing about vegetarianism, because I don't want people to get the wrong impression. Vegetarianism is the best way to eat, not only for our bodies, but our planet. And who doesn't know that we consume more resources raising cows than raising corn, you know, as far as its impact on the environment, the water we use, the soils, etc., and the amount of calories we produce. So there's no question. The problem is, again, that vegetarianism leads to most people to a lot of sugar, like you illustrated. I'm almost vegetarian. I do eat fish, and I will eat chicken once in a while to to give my salad a little more pizzazz, you know. But I don't bring those foods home. I just buy them at restaurants as part of my quest to have a little variety, a little fun.
Yeah.
And so that leads me, if you don't mind, to the second pillar of lifestyle medicine.
We need to take a break for a minute, and we'll come back.
My company, New Galaxy Enterprises, is a California corporation specializing in the creation of media and promotional content. We are focused on original, innovative projects that are good for humanity. These projects could be nonfiction books or novels, fictional screenplays or documentary content, websites and website content, commercial advertising content for print, audio, or video products on the internet, television, or radio, musical scores for advertising, television, or film, video, audio editing, etc. We want to promote products and projects that support the environment, encourage a healthy experience in living, developing, nurturing, and useful technology, and offering platforms for positive, socially constructive entertainment or informative, transformative media. Our experience in creating a variety of products like this is rather vast, and we offer client-based and collaborative products, as well as the opportunity of active investors to join us in the creation and promotion of proprietary products, some of which are in latter stages of development. For more information, go to www.newgalaxyenterprises.com. That's www.newgalaxyenterprises.com. If you're interested in talking to us, just fill out the contact sheet and we will get back with you.
Dr. Hugo Rodier has published 4 books on health issues covering practically all chronic health problems. You may find them by accessing his website at hugorodier.com. That's HUGORODIER.com. Gut health is the most academic, while switching off chronic disease is the most patient-oriented, with simple recipes to implement his nutritional protocols. Lightstorm is a band founded by Kalasu and Jonima Wintergate, a band which is primarily dedicated to spiritual values and experience, but never forgets that the world is trapped in a highly toxic and negative matrix that needs to be dissolved because it is blocking the better paradigms we all deserve. Here is their powerful song called I Am.
The silence of all I am, reposing in bliss while dancing as light I am. The great imposter, the seed of illusion I am. The first breath of life, the pure sound of Om I Am. The wave and the foam of this cosmic ocean I am. The silent secret that rests at the bottom I am. Separation I am. The lover of love, the bride of awareness I am. The true self in all, the ultimate bridegroom I am. All mad desperation and final elation I am. The desolate pain of wanting and longing I am. The tender love flame inside every heart I am. Exposed in all living by burning and giving I am.
Okay, we're back on the Integrated Hermetic Health Show with Dr. Rodier. We're discussing the second pillar of lifestyle medicine, which is relationships. How do relationships help in our health, and why are they actually a second pillar next to nutrition and environment?
Well, the best way to put it is to revisit the experience of Roseto, Pennsylvania, a county in Pennsylvania where a whole town of Italians immigrated en masse. Over 100 years ago, perhaps less. And so when they lived in community that way, they knew each other intimately. They ate their Italian food, you know, a lot of spaghetti, a lot of grains, greasy meatballs, and you know the drill.
Yeah.
Yet their health was twice as good as adjacent counties in Pennsylvania eating the American diet. Why? Because these people knew each other intimately. Guido the baker knew intimately Tony, the mailman. And so they married each other's families. So they had good relationships. But when they began to intermarry with other people from other counties, their cohesion, social cohesion began to break down. And after a couple of generations, their health issues and diseases were the same as adjacent counties. And so the other point that I would like to use to illustrate this simple concept is an article that came out in the Lancet, the journal Lancet, about 20 years ago, saying that people who eat candy twice a month live longer. And I puzzled over that article when I first read it. What's your impression of that article? How do you think it might be making live longer to eat candy twice a month?
Well, I know that sometimes when I eat candy or have something, you know, equally interesting in a movie theater, and I hate to tell you what it was besides the popcorn, but anyway, it really makes me feel good.
Of course it does. Okay, see, I believe the article has nothing to do with candy, all right? What the article is addressing is a more laissez-faire approach to our diets. This Nazi approach that we've got to eat perfectly well all the time can be off-putting, can be stressful. It's not conducive to good relationships when you start to impose your lifestyle on others. In other words, if you can eat candy only twice a month, enjoy it, and then leave it. That's a key, a more relaxed approach to our diets. Now, this is no license for people to eat candy, and I always hesitate to bring up this article because, you know, we got sugarholics out there who will eat one piece of candy, then they can't stop, they're gone. And they'll be eating candy every day of the month, not just twice a month. So with that caveat, I hope the intent of the article is clear for people. And but this leads us to the heart. You know, how we feel in our hearts. You know, are we always on edge? Are we tense? Are we micromanaging our diets? Are we too overly concerned about our health? There's such a thing as overdoing it. And you know, I have some patients that come in with these huge lists of micromanaging their lifestyle. And, you know, of course, I honor that. And I spend the time answering every question. But I try to put in there the concept that we just talked about, that there's diminishing returns to being too Nazi about anything, not just food.
Yeah.
And these are issues of the heart. It boils down to how we feel in our hearts. What kind of childhood did you have? Because those are the roots of compulsions and addictions. We're trying to fill a gap that mommy and daddy might not have filled well for us in the right way.
Mm-hmm. It's interesting.
I have another blog about this. Should I cover it now?
Sure.
Well, the blog in question, and people can find my blogs and newsletters on my website, HugoRodier.com. But this one is titled, "It is only with the heart that one can see clearly." And of course, you know, literature lovers will recognize where that pithy sentence comes from, right? The Little Prince, Antoine de Saint-Exupéry, who won the Nobel Prize in 1946 after the war for writing that incredible novelette that changed my life. I read it at a critical point in my life in college. In French, you know, because I took French in college, high school, just to keep it up. But it's interesting because I was at a fork in the road at that time as a freshman in college. The other book that my French professor had us read was L'Étranger by Camus. Well, this is about a man totally detached from his feelings, no relationships, and he becomes a very sad, unhealthy man indeed. And wouldn't you know it, the professor decided to play to make the book into a play, and he assigned me to play Mersault, the lead character, the knucklehead who was just totally isolated from people.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And did he pick me because I was putting out those kinds of vibes? I don't know. But it was a blow to my heart because I saw up close and personal what I would become if I did not become more gregarious, if I stop worrying so much about people discriminating against me because of my olive skin and all that, and that's a cat from another bag. And so here it was. Are you going to be L'Étranger or are you going to be the Little Prince?
What is the translation of L'Étranger? I think I know the book, but I can't.
The Stranger.
Right. That's right. Okay.
Yeah. Whereas the Little Prince is about a little boy who is searching for love, searching for a relationship. And he doesn't know that he already has it in his rose back in on his asteroid. And by coming to Earth, he realizes what the beauty is of having a relationship with people, with his rose. So a fox teaches him that. And the fox tells the Little Prince, it is only with the heart that one can see clearly. What is important is invisible to the eye. And those words were engraven in my heart and saved me, because I grew up without parents. So thanks to the right books, I was able to take the road less traveled. The road of the heart, which is quite lacking in medicine. You know, all the stuff we get into is because docs are so left brain, and their training emphasizes that for many reasons, most of which are solitary. But we're left with unbalanced health care that cares nothing for the right brain, the brain of fiction, the brain of poetry, the brain of relationships, how we relate to each other and the environment, the brain of realizing that it's more important to hang out together at a hamburger joint than not hang out at all.
That's really important, I think.
You know, putting all this together, if you will, a huge article just came out. I highlighted in my February newsletter that will be posted shortly. But it's an article that we see in the journal Neurology Reviews, this month issue, or January's issue, page 12. And the article kind of, it's incredible. These are things that we've known for quite a while, but when put together, it brings the message home quite a bit better. But it turns out that seizure disorder medications like carbamazepine, phenytoin, phenobarbital, and primidone denude your body of vitamin D. In other words, those drugs, which are fairly common, raise your vitamin D requirements. So you can see how that article is quite telling at many levels. One, a whole lot of problems we have is because we're taking certain drugs. For instance, antibiotics, birth control pills, hormonal replacement pills, some anti-diabetic pills like metformin rob your body of B vitamins. So here you are running around with less vitamin D, less B vitamins, and guess how important those drugs are for the brain, which is what we're talking about here, a seizure disorder. You see, and so we're chasing our tails, you know, but yet, oh, those drugs have been approved and tested and they're good for you. Of course they are. And in a pinch, you know, when we cannot treat a seizure any other way, which unfortunately that is often the case given brain malformations or trauma, yeah, that's what drugs are for when we're in trouble. But I bet you money we can treat a lot of seizure disorders with marijuana and a ketogenic diet, which you mentioned yourself earlier.
Isn't it also true that certain vitamins and minerals are depleted because of bad diet?
Exactly. Yeah, that's what I talked about when I followed that can of food or can of veggies from inception to the shelf, to the kitchen, I should say. Yeah. Well, you know, since we're going back to nutrition a little bit, here's an article that brings back what you mentioned about fiber and grains. So it turns out that this great article, let's see, it came out in the journal Gut, the last issue, volume 68, where we see that whole grains reduce body weight. You know, that goes for the paleo people who are trying to lose weight on the paleo diet. Whole grain diets reduce body weight and reduce systemic inflammation. Now, the second part, reducing systemic inflammation, might be news to some people, but if you've been listening to this program, you know that inflammation is generated by an upset microbiome in the gut. So by eating grain diets, you're feeding, by not neglecting to eat grains, you're feeding bacteria in the gut that will be happier. And since the bacteria in the gut is the immune system, it will be less likely to produce inflammation.
Interesting.
Yeah, no question the best diet is a plant-based Mediterranean diet where they do eat a little fish, you know, yeah, you know, so like we talked before, the decision to become a vegetarian must not be taken lightly and with an eye to stay away from sugars, refined sugars.
Well, we're going to take a break now and be right back, and we will get into more depth about the nutritional pillar.
We will now say goodbye, followed by another song to brighten our lives and remember that no matter what the financial constraints, we can always fall back on the things that no one has to sign a check for.
For more information about Dr. Rodier's practice, books, blogs, and newsletters, contact Hugo Rodier, MD, at www.hugorodier.com. That's HUGORODIER.com.
and for everyone. They're shining for you and me. The flowers in spring, the birdies that sing, the sunbeams that shine, they're yours, they're mine, and love can come to everyone. The best things in life are free.
Shining sea.